on DAB Digital Radio, digital TV, downloads and online.
This is Five Live.
Dear George Bailey and Mr. Potter, says Mark McAllister. You might remember Mark.
Potter.
Thanks for your help last Friday in trying to excuse me from my wedding day in Belfast.
Okay, yes, I do. So just for those who don't, do you want to remind them?
Do you?
It was that we're having a special screening of a film in Leeds. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately...
We're doing the whole programme from Leeds.
Yeah, exactly. And unfortunately for this gentleman, his wedding day has fallen on the same day as the screening in Leeds. So he wondered whether we could come up with not an excuse, more of an exeat, or a way of moving the wedding so that he could do both.
Yes. Anyway, you're going to have to read an awful lot, I think, here in between the lines. Okay. Thanks very much indeed. Since then, my fiancée Hannah and I have talked. And we decided that I would much rather go to my own wedding than to the cinema in Leeds. The ceremony is at 1:30 anyway, so I might even squeeze a cheeky listen before the speeches. All the best for your big day. I think that's very good.
Well, it's like the end of that Max Boyce routine, isn't it, about I Wandered Lonely Ticketless. Remember that? And he says he's trying to get a ticket for the Cardiff Arms game.
Yep.
And it's a poem. It's a Max Boyce song. And he finally comes across somebody who says they've got a ticket and is a debenture holder. And he says, you know, since my wife's poor mother died, she doesn't want to go and blah, 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 blah. And I said, but, you know, why don't you give it to the family? Don't the family want to go? And he said they do, but the kickoff's at 2 and the funeral's 10 to 4. Boom, boom. Anyway, there we go.
I'm sure that was very good.
But if you know Max Boyce, it was Max Boyce was very funny.
What an exciting very funny. And what an exciting day for you, though, not just to be on this programme.
How much more exciting could it be than being on this
programme? Well, how about having an album launch of your... Is it your first album?
Brothers? Well, you know, we did another one, but this is the first proper one. The other one
was a bit rubbish.
It wasn't a bit rubbish. It was independently released, I think, is the phrase.
As opposed to this sort of was on Sony BMG.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, we turned all the big labels down. Yeah, Weeping Angel Records came to us. They were the only people that.
Is it on
really...
Spotify and iTunes? I mean, can I access?
Apparently,
it?
I don't understand. You know, hey, ask me to. But you're coming, aren't you, to this gig?
Yeah, I hope so.
Although I had a very worrying phone call when you said it's at 5:30. No, you're.
I'm on the list now.
Yes, you're on the list, Simon. But you think it's at 5:30. When was the last time you went to a gig that was at 5:30?
Graham Thomas, who says, first place, Brighton Marina, Texas Hold'em, £50 freeze out February 2009. Good doctor has occasional pronunciation issues.
Yeah, apparently so.
Could you ask Mark to slow down a bit when he says fetus papyricious?
Fetus papyricious.
Throughout last week's show, it sounded as though he was saying fetus bubbericious, and I thought he was referring to a new Lebanese-style dip made with baby aubergine. Anyway, we'd just like to try and help that out, if at all possible, because obviously it's easy to confuse the two. A lot of excitement about Watchmen, which we'll get to after three. Anyway, tofu, now you see, just in those two words, I think people have an inclination as to which way the review's going to go. I say excitement, you say, is there? Hmm.
That's just how I sound.
Dear Doctor, do I go alone to the cinema? Says Tofu. Dear Doctor, I raised the prospect of going to see Watchmen with friends over breakfast this morning. Mm. However, none of them were interested in going. So do I go myself or just wait for the DVD? Since for me, the cinema has always been very much a social experience, so going alone seems alien to me. No, I think going on your own is great, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
As long as you can have an entire screening room to yourself.
Yeah, and it's the seats, you know, fore and aft, left and right. That's the most important
also,
thing.
Can the good doctor say hi to Shirley, who's a first-year student studying animation in Bournemouth? She's been feeling down. She's a huge fan of the good doctor, so hopefully this will cheer her up.
Hi to Shirley.
If you get a chance, says Richard, to watch... this Watchman. Oh, hang on. There's loads of kind of watch. So many Watchman emails. And basically, a lot of people, apparently, a lot of interest online as to which way you're going to go.
Oh, really?
On this. So I think what we're going to do.
Can you tell what I'm going to do from saying, oh, really, now after I've said it twice?
Yes, yes, yes. And a lot of people, just from the fact that you said, un film de Zack Snyder, just because you said that, have automatically worked out that you're not that impressed.
I said, un film de Zack Snyder.
Sorry, is it male? I suppose if it's Zack Snyder.
It's not Zack Snyder. It's the unfilm, isn't it? Where's the noun in that sentence?
Unfilm.
Unfilm. Unfilm is le film.
Unfilm,
le film. So unfilm.
The Watchman. The Changeling. A Changeling.
Yeah, well, no, but the Watchman, the Changeling thing is a big deal because The Changeling is a horror movie starring George C. Scott, which is not Changeling. It's very different.
Okay, there's other stuff, of course, including American Teen and Young Victoria and Wendy and Lucy, Watchmen, all of which will come up after three. New in Town is at number 10.
There was some criticism last week that my impression of Renee Zellweger was exactly the same as my impression of Gwyneth Paltrow.
Well, and
of
course, quite right.
No, and of course, they don't sound at all similar.
The
Gwyneth Paltrow impression goes... That's where if you go onto goop.com, which is her self-help page, that's what you get. You get... Now, I said something about Renee Zellweger, and then I made a noise which sounded similar to that. Hamster staring at the sun was the phrase that James King said just before the movie started. And I've been trying to figure out how it is that you do Renee Zellweger, and the closest I can get is... And that's what the difference is, that Gwyneth Paltrow is... And Renee Zellweger is... It's a sort of sucking sound, like that. It's a rubbish movie. And it's basically, it's meant to be Bridget Jones Goes to Fargo. And you know what? I wish she'd stay there. And I wish the guy with the wood chipper had been on hand to spicy up the plot.
The Curious Case of Benjamin Button turns up at number 9.
And the funny thing is that if you remember... I've given myself a throat thing. I was one of the very early people to say Case of Benjamin Flemish Button moment. is meretricious and is essentially Forrest Gump with A-levels. It's funny how after that initial period, now everyone's come out of the woodwork and said, oh, it's rubbish. And there was a kind of critical holding of breath whilst it was being touted as this big Oscar contender. But now it's kind of like the thing that everyone knows. Everyone knows Benjamin Button's rubbish.
No, they don't.
Well, they do, actually, yes.
No, they don't. Well, I mean, clearly, because he got nominated for loads of awards.
No, but that's the whole point.
So a lot of people think it's very good.
No, a lot of people who are doing awards nominations who don't know diddly squat went, ooh, it's backwards and it's Brad Pitt and it's David Fincher and some bits of it look quite good, therefore it must be good. And there, it's a classic case of the first, you know, the flare going up going, it's Forrest Gump with A-levels. And then everything else followed suit.
He's just not that into U2 at number 8.
And I'm not just not that into U2. But
when you got home...
Yes.
Did Mrs. Kermode say, you know what, you smell of Bono?
Yeah, you know, for a start, there is no Mrs. Kermode.
I know, she's Professor.
Yeah. Sorry, Professor. And you're fine. And Professor no, William. She didn't say, you smell of Bono. She said, did you really hug Bonio?
How predictable. Hotel for Dogs is at 7.
But he was nice, though.
He was.
Yeah, Hotel for Dogs came out the week that I was off, and I didn't go and see it. It was half-term, and I'm afraid I didn't
like the bit make when he said, you look like Mickey Mouse with the headphones.
No, and then he corrected it. There was a weird thing. He said, I look like Mickey Mouse. And I went, oh, the insults are flying. He went, no, Michael Mouse.
Oh, that's okay, then.
Like, somehow, it wasn't the Mickey bit.
2 minutes to do the remaining films. The International's at 6.
Clive Owen, good, rugged, but kind of same as before. Thinks it's very serious. It's all about banks. But once they get to the shootout in the Guggenheim Museum, they ain't got nowhere to go.
Confessions of a Shopaholic at 5.
Was, again, a half-term movie that I didn't see. Although I heard Andrew reviewing it, and it didn't sound terrific.
Bolt, number 4. And if you have a cinema that's showing it in 3D, and they charge you extra money...
No, I know. That's bad.
Well, it's
bad.
Well, clearly, you can't. If it's in 3D, you can't watch it without the glasses, so they can't charge you extra.
No, what they're doing is that I think it's pretty much everywhere showing in 3D and 2D. But I think it is. It's an important point. The cinemas have to not charge for use of the 3D glasses. It is outrageous. If 3D is the future, then you know what? The back end that's coming from it is going to pay all those bills. Don't give me any of this nonsense about, ooh, you have to pay for the 3D glasses. No, I want to watch the film, and I want you to provide the equipment so I can watch the film that you made, and it is outrageous.
It's like charging more for a seat.
But it's like the thing, you know, when you get a train ticket. Oh, you know, the train ticket is a ticket to get on the train. It's not for a seat. Really? I hadn't thought of that. But no, absolutely, you should not have to pay for glasses. It is outrageous.
Oh, you want us to draw the curtain so you can see the screen?
I didn't
realise that until we were just going to show it.
And you want the sound as well,
well
in
that's
both
extra.
Channels.
And colour?
Yeah, but you know what I'd like? I'd like the sound in both channels from the film I'm watching, but can I not have the sound in both channels from the film that's playing next door,
the
guy who's doing the drug deal on the mobile phone.
The Unborn at 3.
Sub-exorcist nonsensical rip-off in which woman
looks
in.
At 2.
Great Clint Eastwood movie, should have been nominated for several awards.
And back at number 1, Slumdog Millionaire.
Slumdog
Squarepants Millionaire, back at number 1. Lots of emails coming up, lots of correspondence. The Watchmen review is imminent. I have my own copy now of the new Dodge Brothers album. It's being launched tonight, and it's called Louisa and the Devil. And it features Mark Kermode, Alex Hammond, Ali Hergy, is that
yes.
right? Yeah. Mike Hammond with Linda Ruth Williams. That'll be Mrs. Kermode then, on auto harp.
Exactly. A fantastic instrument.
This is good. A very neat little product.
It was Jules who designed that. It does the Clash stuff. So good Clash stuff.
Now, thanks very much, Lee, for all the backflips. We were right at the end of yesterday's, last week's programme, we were talking about backflips, which is happening a lot. Online and on tweeting as well, where you have to do an inverse review of a movie in 140 characters.
Oh, yes.
For example, Tim Kenyon, who's done lots of them all week, has got a Shawshank Redemption backflip. Man breaks into prison to repair wall, demolishes library, and is released to life as a banker. Now, you see, that would be quite
good. That's very good.
That might work.
That's very good.
And there's quite a few. Haley Joel Osment uses sight, sound, smell, taste and touch to convince everyone else that Bruce Willis is, in fact... I better not finish that, because you give away the opening of the movie.
Yeah, that's right.
There are quite a few out there. Thanks very much. We'll do as many backflips
as
we
possibly can. If you do Citizen Kane backwards, you know, it's the same movie, though, isn't it? A man with a sledge wonders what happened to it.
Yeah. No, I have got some, actually, somewhere. You might recognise this. Two Catholic priests spend their time trying to convince the daughter of a washed-up actress to be a tad more devilish.
Yes, very good.
Now, Dear Incision and Drainage, finally saw Slumdog Millionaire on Tuesday. I enjoyed it immensely. Superbly written, acted, directed, looked sumptuous. I visited India, including Mumbai, in 2007. It allowed me to indulge in some reminiscing, so much so that as we left the cinema, I proclaimed, without a trace of irony, that brought back a lot of memories. Loyal listener that I am, I then laughed at myself heartily, much to the confusion of my friend.
Everybody else.
Absolutely gutted that you'll be less than a mile from my house in Leeds soon, whilst I'll be looking after incontinent old ladies at work. Yours as ever, Dr. Bishop.
Brackets. There's really nothing you could say to that.
A real one. So stuff your PhD and your honorary doctorate, says Dr. Bishop.
Can I say, my mum, who is a real doctor, says that I am the real doctor and she's just a GP. But then she's my mum, you know.
Mark on this says, Simon, could you please ask T'other Monk to stop doing female impressions? He sounds like my cat asking to be fed, so I found myself going into the kitchen and opening cans of cat food.
Well, that's the most useful thing Gwyneth Paltrow's voice has served to do for quite some time.
Pete in Retford, I love Mark's revised impression of Renée Zellweger and have been experimenting. The exact same effect can be achieved by placing an old pair of rubber Wellingtons in a washing machine and placing said machine on a low-temperature, delicate wash. About 7.5 minutes in, there is a rinse cycle in which the machine makes the same noises as Renée Zellweger. It's either the Wellingtons or someone's actually replaced them with the real Miss Zellweger when I nipped out for a biscuit, in which case I better try to get her out.
And what was Renée Zellweger's first starring role?
It was in Texas Chainsaw Massacre 6, wasn't
Four.
It? Four.
Come on.
I'm getting
How many
closer.
Years have you been doing this? Yes.
Neil McCulloch, very excited about Watchmen, also very nervous about the Good Doctor's review. May break the rules and watch it before his review.
Okay.
Andy Mank, these are all from Twitter. Can't wait for Watchmen review. I've avoided all the other reviews. It's up to the Good Doctor whether I see it tonight or not. I'm betting, says Tim in Nottingham, says, Dear Laurel and Hardy, betting that Mark will hate Watchmen partly because it's directed by the same bloke behind 300.
I didn't hate 300.
And partly because hitherto, aside from Batman Begins and Spider-Man, most comic adaptations have been a huge pile of pants. So we await the good sage's verdict forthwith. You want to do it?
Yeah, shall we?
Let's do Watchmen then.
So, long awaited, and that's understating it, Watchmen, adaptation of a classic comic novel co-written by Alan Moore, who famously has sort of taken his name off it and indeed off movie adaptations of his work because he doesn't like them. He was on The Culture Show about a year ago, and maybe a couple of years ago. He was talking about why he didn't like his work being adapted and the problems that he had with From Hell and League of Extraordinary Gentlemen and V for Vendetta, which he said was the kind of final straw. And he's now at the point when he just says he doesn't want to be credited. So when the movie, when the credits come up at the beginning, it just says co-created by Dave Gibbons. And Alan Moore's name isn't on it. And I believe that his arrangement was he doesn't get anything from it. He doesn't want anything to do with it. He just wants clear blue water between him and it. There was an interview that was done at a Comic-Con a while ago in which somebody was saying, you know, look, do you have any opinions about it? He said, yes, I've put a curse on it. And they said, but it's directed by Zack Snyder, who's apparently a very nice guy. And Alan Moore said, yes, but he also directed 300. So there is a long-standing thing that Alan Moore doesn't like and won't see, more to the point. It's not that he takes against you, he won't see them. So that's fine. And just because Alan Moore doesn't like them doesn't mean nobody else should, but we have to establish that at the very, very beginning. So the film is, well, the story of Watchmen. Did you read Watchmen when you were younger?
No, I didn't.
An interesting thing happened.
One of those things that you catch up with later.
Yeah, no.
Unless you're particularly finally tuned in to the comic world, which
no,
I wasn't in.
I wasn't, but I was given the compiled Watchmen by a guy called Simon Clark, actually. And it was very interesting because
Simon Clark?
Yeah. No, that's not the interesting bit. I was talking to
somebody else
who's a really big, thank you, who's a big comic book fan. I said, oh, Watchmen. He said, I remember reading it when I was a teenager. He said, no, you don't. You remember reading it in your 20s. And it's interesting that I remember being younger than I was when I read it. Of course, I wasn't a teenager when I read it. I was indeed in my 20s. I just retrospectively remember being a much younger person, this relates to something that Melvin Bragg was saying, that the point that you are when you encounter works actually affects the way you think about it. And I thought at the time, gosh, this is terribly profound and terribly important and terribly political and terribly adventurous. It's set in an alternative world in which Nixon has been able to be re-elected. The Vietnam War has been won through use of Dr. Manhattan Blue Giant. You had a whole race of people who came together who were Cape Crusaders. Then Cape Crusading was outlawed. Now nuclear Armageddon is looming, and the old group, which is actually the second generation old group, are thinking of reforming, one of their number having been recently murdered. And believe me, what I'm doing, although it already sounds incomprehensible, is a massively simplified version of the plot itself, which is very, very multi-stranded, very, very multi-layered, very, very complicated. Here's a clip.
Rorschach thinks someone's hunting the Watchman, huh? You think it's possible? I think statistically one murder doesn't equal a trend. Rorschach's a sociopath, Dan. I mean, so was the comedian. He was practically a Nazi. You know that better than anyone.
I'm not here because I miss him.
But it's obviously occurred to Rorschach that we're the only ones who know each other's identities.
Actually, the whole world knows yours. That's why I'm warning you first.
Thank you, Dan. But I fear there's something much more real to worry about than Rorschach's mass killer.
If the Russians do launch their nukes, can John really stop them?
The Soviets have 51,000 warheads stockpiled. Even if John stops 99% of them, 1% to get through, he'll still kill every living thing on Earth. Even Dr. Manhattan can't be everywhere at once.
Now, you can hear from that the tone of portent, if not ponder, that is prevalent. Although, oddly enough, this being unfilmed as Zack Snyder, the film flips between incredibly flippant and hugely portentous. Everybody probably knows this already, but the film went through several directors who was meant to be up for doing it. Terry Gilliam at one point was meant to be doing it. He thought it would only work as a TV miniseries. He famously said to Alan Moore, "How would you do it?" Alan Moore famously said, "I wouldn't." We were here in this studio talking to Paul Greengrass at one point. After Paul Greengrass, I think it must have been when he just won something for United 93 or maybe one of the Bourne movies. And we spoke to him and he was actually on the set where he was going to direct Watchmen. Do you remember this? Mm-hmm. They were in pre-production and the blimp was up and everything was ready to go. And then that fell down again. The project has now been brought to us by visionary, in inverted commas, director Zack Snyder, who did that retooling of Dawn of the Dead and then famously did 300, which was obviously, you know, similarly graphic and similarly concerned with style over content. The thing about Zack Snyder is this. He absolutely loves the source material. Clearly, demonstrably, is in love with the source material. All the stuff you read about, everyone was walking around on set with copies of the original material. This is the visual reference. This is how he wanted it to work. And, of course, the strip's co-creator is credited and is absolutely on board with the project. So, there is no question that he's a fan. The problem is, he is also a fanboy, and there are things that go with being a fanboy that are deeply problematic.
Fanboy
is a phrase which is used in relation to horror fans, which is geeky, nerdy horror fans who are absolutely devoted to the movies themselves, but possibly without relation to the real world. They are classically, and I would
weirdos.
Say, well, no, they're classically people who I would count as my own parish, you know, spotty, geeky, awkward adolescents with no friends who love spending the time in the Scala cinema watching, you know, obscure Fulci movies. Actually, I don't really like Lucio Fulci very much, but they would be the horror fanboys. Obsessives, right? People who are obsessive about detail. The thing with Zack Snyder is this. There is no doubting that what he's done in this adaptation of The Watchmen, which is 18 certificates, has got, you know, violence and apparently adult subject matter, has decided to go in and do what he thinks is the Citizen Kane of graphic novel film adaptations, in the same way that the original was referred to as the Citizen Kane of comic strips. It was awarded, you know, very, very respectable literary prizes and broke out in a way that other strips hadn't done up until that point. But he is a man who understands surfaces more than he understands anything else. Now, I need to be very, very clear about this. It may be partly a function of how old I was when I read Watchmen and how profound I thought it was. But the thing that I got most from watching Watchmen was that it was all surface and no depth. And I don't remember that being the case with the original. I've subsequently spoken to some other people who said, oh, yeah, but what you're talking about is a fault with the original. I don't think it is, but I can't face going back to revisit the original. I know how I felt about it when it was first written. I felt that it was politically interesting and politically radical. I think that for all its political gesturing, the film isn't. I mean, the film, it makes great deal of political gestures. There's a restaging of the Kennedy assassination. There is a guy playing Nixon in the war room, which is meant to look like Dr. Strangelove. But what you do is you sit there going, well, that's a guy who's meant to be Nixon, which, of course, for me is incredibly important. But actually, all I'm interested in is the fact that he's got a very big comical stick-on rubber nose. And he's in the Dr. Strangelove war room, but he doesn't seem to be doing anything that would in any way imply the depth or the satire or the, you know, the sort of spark of Dr. Strangelove. There are endless musical sections which seem to be positive. We get a little bit of Hendrix, we get a little bit of Simon and Garfunkel. We get a kind of montage sequence which throws together elements of pop culture, and it looks very impressive. But when you start picking it apart, you go, yes, but what does it all actually add up to? And the answer is not very much. And as Zack Snyder demonstrated when he did 300, in the end, he's kind of more interested in what people are wearing than what they're doing. Now, there is a thing in the original Watchmen which is about how putting on costumes changes characters and whether that in itself is a twisted and perverse thing. But it's not even as if Zack Snyder understands this. So you get one of the characters who's dressed very much in latex, and the latex just looks a little bit naff and a little bit 80s and a little bit, and I hate to say this, a little bit Duran Duran. Okay, so generally, I have a problem with getting below the surface. Second thing is that this problem about him being flippant on the one hand and portentous on the other means that because he has no depth, when the stuff gets into murky territory, like when it has a near rape sequence, when it has a sequence, a hideous sequence involving a child abduction, he does not know how to deal with that. It's like he can't do serious. All he can do is flippant. So the portentous stuff just sounds flippant at best, and at worst sounds terribly adolescent and terribly misguided. The third thing is, length is not a measure of depth. Just because something is 2¾ hours long doesn't mean it has 2¾ hours worth of stuff to say. Now, Paul Greengrass, who, of course, is a very intelligent, you know, political director, wanted to change the story, wanted to update it. Snyder said, no, I don't want to do any of that. I want to absolutely stick with the original. But just liking the comic isn't enough to mediate that, to put it on screen. And the worst thing is, and I mean, I hate to say this because I understand that at the heart of it is somebody who really wants to put The Watchmen up there on screen. It's not as good a movie as V for Vendetta. Now, Alan Moore hated the idea of V for Vendetta. But V for Vendetta, we've got to accept that Watchmen the film is not the comic. You have to ask yourself, does it work on the level of a film? The answer is no. It's long and baggy and quite boring, and the visuals occasionally are arresting, but equally occasionally look slightly Spandau Ballet and a little bit sub Blade Runner and a little bit post 300 and a little bit not quite Sin City. And the graphic violence, which Snyder is held out for, seems to be there for no reason other than to say, hey, you know, I'm holding out for the graphic violence. Well, I've got nothing against graphic splatter, but 2 hours, 45 minutes for a few moments of graphic splatter is a really long haul. Plus, on top of all this, there's the sense all the way through it that the movie thinks that it's telling you something really fundamentally profound, whilst all the time skimming over the surface, like in that Harry skipping over the waters like a stone. And if you look at a movie like V for Vendetta, the film holds together on its own. Whether or not Alan Moore likes it doesn't matter. V for Vendetta works as a movie, okay? It actually works narratively. The pain that the characters feel works. There are some scenes in it which are terribly brutal, but they work. And it has an incredibly radical ending. An incredibly radical ending that's kind of pantomimey but hangs together. Watchmen comes at you with what it looks like. Somebody described it as the Brodie's Notes of 20th century. Nigel Floyd, in fact. My great colleague Nigel Floyd described it as the Brodie's Notes of 20th century culture. And he's quite right. That's what it feels like. Just because you've got a lot of pop culture references doesn't mean you're actually doing anything interesting with them. So it's a really strange thing. And I came out of it in a state of, well, partly exhaustion, because it's much too long. It's much, much too long. And Terry Gilliam was probably right that it should have been done as a miniseries. But more frustratingly, with the sense that just because you give the material to somebody who really likes the material doesn't mean that that person necessarily knows the best thing to do with the material on screen. And a classic example of that, Stanley Kubrick in The Shining. Everyone other than me thinks The Shining is one of the greatest horror movies ever made. Stanley Kubrick had almost no respect for the original at all, but he did something interesting with it that worked for a number of people. Snyder is, in the end, not Christopher Nolan. he's not the guy who's, you know, who's got the sort of nous to... I mean, I don't think Dark Knight is the masterpiece everybody thinks it is, but I think in terms of what happened with Batman Begins, making a massive art house movie that just happens to look like a huge blockbuster. In the end, he's Zack Snyder. He's Zack Snyder, you know, hey, he's Richie Potts, you
don't
know.
Start doing the voice.
No, I'm again. Sorry, but
he'll upset the cats.
But so there's the frustration. If I'm going to spend 2 hours and 45 minutes, I'd like to spend it in the company of Paul Greengrass or Terry Gilliam or somebody who's going to say something more other than, "Hey, Watchmen, it's really cool."
It can't be boring.
It is boring. No, that's it is boring.
Can't make Watchmen boring.
2 hours, 45 minutes, it's boring. I'm sorry, it's not all boring, but some of it is very boring.
Which is the most boring bit?
Well, the most boring bit, there's the really naff sub-80s sex scene, which is incredibly naff and very boring.
What's a sub-80s sex scene?
Well, you know, you probably don't.
Professor Williams,
yeah, so. In the 1980s, there was a whole slew of straight-to-video movies in which there was a point in the narrative when suddenly a saxophone would go... and the camera would go into what's referred to as a Dutch angle, and the lights would go off a little bit, and then you'd get a straight-to-video, you know, that.
And tonsil hockey.
It's a bit... Tonsil hockey?
A bit of tonsil hockey.
I've never heard that phrase before.
Okay, so it's a...
Yeah, it's a peculiar thing.
And that's the most boring bit. So the sub-80s...
The sub-80s... Well, no, that's not quite so boring, because that's quite silly. So there's an entertainment in it, and you just think that's kind of misjudged. Well, I think it's meant to be silly. I think it's meant to be silly. I'm not entirely sure. The most boring bit is the hour... In the second hour, when there's an awful lot of plot explanation and an awful lot of generally talking about the themes of the film. And it's like they're talking about them, they're talking about them, they're talking about them, but there's nothing underneath. So here's the essential problem. If you're a fan of the comic, it's not the comic. Of course it isn't. It couldn't be. So you'll
very close to.
No. Well, no, because oddly, it's one of those things. You know, maybe Alan Moore was right when Terry Gilliam said, "How would you do it?" And he said, "I wouldn't." Maybe he was right. In the case of V for Vendetta, it veers so far away from what Alan Moore wanted, but it finds its own identity in doing it. If you're not a fan of the comic, you're going to sit there for a lot of it going, what is all this about? Because the storytelling in it is... I mean, the thing with 300 and the thing with his other... Dawn of the Dead is that he 300 is a really simple story, right? It's 300 blokes dress up as the village people and go and fight that bloke out of Culture Club. That's it. That is the story. In the case of this, he can't manage the narrative complexity. So if you're a fan of the comic, it isn't. If you're not a fan of the comic, you're going, what's going on? The thing itself seems to have depth, but the film doesn't have any depth at all. Invoking politics and invoking pop culture is not enough. And you know what? The latex looks naff. But I appreciate that it's made by somebody who loves the source, but loving the source isn't necessarily the best thing.
If someone's on the source, that means that you know they get tanked up a lot. So if you're
on the source, not the
source.
So you know what I mean.
Yeah, I was just clarifying it.
You're making a pun. It's a palindrome.
Simon in Froome saw Watchmen last night. It's terrible. Why didn't they call it League of Extraordinary Gentlemen 2?
Yeah,
it's just as bad and all over the place. Dear Hellman and Bradfern, after that review of Watchmen, I needed consoling, so my wife hit me in the face with an Xbox, says says Bill.
Is that good?
Why did she hit you in the face with an Xbox? This is Bill, ADC driving supervisor, HSE part 2, mixed gas driver. But,
mixed gas driver?
That's what he says. Anyway, so if you go, you need to get back in touch, please, Bill. Why did your wife hit you in the face with an Xbox just to make you feel better? Dear Cheech and Chong, regarding the good doctor's use of the term fanboy, the Japanese term for this type of person is an otaku, which sounds much more cool.
Is it? There's also a great Japanese word, which is buriko, which is pretend child.
Why would you want to use that?
Well, it's a fashion. You know, people who are like in their 90s, when they're dressing like they're kind of younger kids, buriko.
I'm sure you'd use it a lot.
Well, I have
Fran,
used it.
I'm sure you do, yeah, with all your Guardian reading friends. Fran in Watford. Simon, I was interested to hear that Mark's Paltrow impression sounded like a cat because my Jack Russell attacked my laptop. Please ask him to refrain from said impression, both for mental health of your canine fans and for the safety of broadcasting appliances. On the subject of backflips, these are the reverse reviews. Another one from here from Tim. This is very good. A Bourne backflip.
Yeah.
Man rampages across the globe trying to forget his identity, only to regain it after a long swim. These really work. Paul in Bristol, Dr. Miyagi and Daniel San. Michael Caine gets his coach out of a precarious position, picks up three wrecked minis from the bottom of a cliff and gives the Italians a heap of gold, goes home, visits Noel Coward and goes to prison. And last one for now, Mac Millings on Willy Wonka. Dear fake doctor, and mum says you're a real doctor, a boy returns a sweet factory to its rightful owner, regurgitates sweets, and is escorted from the building, plunging his family into poverty. Slightly different, true. Darker, bleaker version of Willy Wonka and the good. Chocolate Family.
And the Chocolate Family.
Factors, Chocolate Family. This will go alongside the Lighthouse yes. Family, but not quite as good. Mayo at bbc.co.uk, 85058.
Is there any other from anyone who's seen The Watchmen?
They will be coming in even as we speak.
Okay, fine.
We'll do more watch. If you've seen it, a lot of people have seen it on screenings, so they've seen it abroad. Mayo at bbc.co.uk. We do some backflips as well. I've got a couple of minutes away from the news. Can you squeeze in something? Maybe not young Victoria. I don't know. What do you want to do? What do you want to do?
Well,
what
will fit into this doing anything gap? Really quickly like that. Shall I do? Can I do surveillance? Maybe. I haven't got a clip of it.
That's fine. You can you can witter.
Surveillance is the new movie by Jennifer Lynch. Everyone knows two things about Jennifer Lynch, right? One of them is
I don't know anything about Jennifer Lynch.
Yes, you do. She's the daughter of David Lynch.
Is that the one with the hair?
The one with the hair, yeah.
Which if you fold him in half, he's just got hair like you, but then when you open it up so you can see that the whole
like
head
Lynch. Hello,
looks
hello.
Just like David Lynch, and there's a photograph on the website in which we combine the hair of Lynch and the face of Kermode.
So Jennifer Lynch, daughter of David Lynch, who at one point claimed that she was the inspiration for the Eraserhead baby. You've seen Eraserhead, right?
I have, yeah.
That's the thing about that. Like that wouldn't happen. And she said that because, I mean, David himself hasn't said this, but she has said that it was his anxieties about being a parent, and she grew up on the Eraserhead set, which is, let's face it,
that's
a bit strange. That is going to do you in. And she made her first feature with a film called Boxing Helena, which was widely regarded as the worst film. Well, some people thought it was the worst film ever. It was the one in which... it was going to be Kim Basinger, who was Julian Sands, is the doctor who, and she refused to let Julian Sands, you know, amputate all her limbs and box her, hence the title Boxing Helena. So in the end, she backed out of it. There was a legal suit. Didn't she end up losing a town?
But you did think, at what point did you not realise that this maybe wasn't a great idea? I mean, that's the plot. It's called Boxing Helena. It's quite obvious.
It's about somebody called Helena who ends up in a box. And worse still, they're put in a box by Julian Sands.
It's not a great film.
So, that, right? So after making that and the huge Razzie that
it was
got,
only a PG. I mean, who'd have thought?
Boxing Helena?
Just a joke.
That's a joke.
Carry on.
She's now back with a film called Surveillance, which is getting all these really good reviews. People are saying, wow, Jennifer Lynch, she's really fab. You know, it's incredible. Maybe we were all wrong about Boxing Helena. Two things to say about this. Firstly, no, you weren't wrong about Boxing Helena. Honk. I mean, it is an absolutely Mr. Poopy Pants film on every possible level.
I find there's actually a category down at ATV, Mr.
Poopy Pants. It's alongside TT, which is Total Toilet, and Mr. Poopy Pants film. And the story is there's these two FBI agents who turn up in a backwater place where there are some people in a police cell. They're being held because there's been a grisly murder, and they're being interviewed separately by surveillance cameras, hence the title Surveillance, okay? And our FBI agents are listening. They've each got a different version of the story. So it's like Rashomon. It's like Rashomon, only it's surveillance. And it's got an executive producer credit for David Lynch, which Jennifer Lynch is actually a very stand-up woman that she is. She said that's how she got the thing made. Nobody was interested. Then she put David Lynch's name on it. They all went, yes, we'll make it tomorrow. And they all walk around wearing those FBI suits that people wear in David Lynch things, like Twin Peaks. You know, so black tie, black thing, what's it, drinking coffee, looking fab, which I don't believe the FBI agents really, really do. And we get to see the story from several different sides. And it's dark, and it's strange, and it's twisted, and it's completely silly. And I saw it in Cannes, in the middle of the Cannes Film Festival. I always like to get a bit of trashy light relief. A couple of years ago, I saw See No Evil, the Greg Dark movie, scrungy horror movie, nuts and bolts, should have been straight to Video Fair, was. In the case of this, it's silly and nonsensical, and it should have been straight to Video Fair, but because it's got Julia Ormond and Bill Pullman, it's directed by Jennifer Lynch, it's got David Lynch's name on the thing, everyone's saying, oh, dark, you know, dark, really serious dark, strange, squishy dark, rather than,
lots of 3D hands. At
yeah, I know, but it's like drawing you into the strange world of Jennifer Lynch. In her mind, nothing is what it seems. It's a world of darkness and strangeness. You go, no, it's a world of that bit on the video shelf, which is trash, Friday night, 89 minutes long, Roger Corman would have put in an exploding helicopter,
poopy pants.
Hey, live with it. And there's a quote
on
the poster.
You're in a poopy pants film,
no,
just cope with it.
There's a quote on the poster from some critic has said, it's one of the harshest movies you'll ever see. What? Come around my house, I'll show you Sarlo. That's one of the harshest movies you'll ever see. Surveillance is dumb as nuts. And the thing it's most famous for is that at the Sitges Film Festival last year, it won the big prize. And there was almost a riot because it beat Let the Right One In, which is a Swedish horror, a Swedish vampire movie, which is a terrifically, really good film. And Surveillance, which is dumb. I mean, I'm not saying I didn't enjoy Surveillance. I did, but I enjoyed it with my trash, silly, daft head on, as opposed to my, in a world of darkness, she was the Prince of Strange. And, you know, that's
I love it very much.
That's it.
That's great. That's very good. By the way, just on your dumb as nuts, last week you said bored as nuts, and often you say chuffed as nuts. And I'm just wondering if nuts are capable of being dumb, bored, and chuffed. Can you have dumb, bored, chuffed nuts?
I think you probably can. You know, nobody's ever picked me up on that before, Simon, and I'm really glad.
No, well, there was on Twitter, if you could follow these things, if you could put the effort in, someone said was just picking you up on being bored as nuts, and I think it was a great expression, really, really liked it, wanted to use it. You just said dumb as nuts and chuffed as nuts, and I don't think nuts are that flexible. Mm. They're not that adaptable. Nuts can
keen
probably
as mustard.
Do, yeah, but keen as mustard, but no, you can't be bored as mustard.
No,
or
but
chuffed
you can,
as
no.
mustard. Or dumb as mustard.
Well, dumb as nuts, I've always said dumb as nuts. You know, we've actually got to the point in our relationship, haven't we, when people start saying, you know that thing you always do? It's really annoying, because you've kind of run out of anything to...
Anyway, let me apologise to Bill, who after the review of Watchmen, needed consoling, so he got hit in the face. As a number of people said, I mean, really, I now feel so stupid. Needs consoling. Console. It's a game.
Oh, consoling. Consoling. You there?
No, yeah. I'm with it.
And okay. Bill says...
Were you there from
and
before?
He also says, I'm a mixed gas diver, not driver.
Oh, I see.
That's what it was.
He wasn't driving mixed gas.
And we need to say hello to Stephen Fry. He's going to, I'm delighted to say he's going to be on the programme in the relatively short distant
Oh, great.
Future.
And hello to Jason Isaacs.
And David Morrissey, assorted members of Pentangle, Focus, Fairport Convention. Who else did we include?
Did we do Paul Bettany? Because he's coming up in a minute.
Paul Bettany, we should certainly do. Hello to Paul. And I hope you enjoyed the pack shop promotion of Mark's sensational new record. And thanks,
that's going on the poster.
Thanks to Calhoun, who says, if the words skiffletainment at its most skiffletaining are not uttered during Dr. K's reviews today, I may weep. So there we go. And I'm quite disappointed that you're not in skiffletainment outfit, because you dress like a hillbilly. when you're doing that.
That's said lovingly, is it?
Yeah. And GZN is also via Twitter. Does the hillbilly outfit include fringing? Because I love fringing. So
Mike's got
fringing.
But no, but I'm not a big fringing fan because it gets in the way of your strings.
Matthew, pretending to work in Toronto, I'm always impressed by Dr. Kermode's extensive vocabulary and often have to get the dictionary out at some point on a Friday afternoon. However, in commenting on the source confusion. Mm. He called it a palindrome. Well, a palindrome...
No, it was a gag!
...is a word or sentence that reads the same backwards as forwards. I believe the word he wanted is homophone.
No, I don't. The word... It's a Monty Python thing. He told me the parrot was dead. He said it was a pun. No, not a pun. A palindrome. It's not a palindrome. The palindrome of Bolton would be not lob. That was why I said I cannot hear anyone say the word it's a pun without continuing to say it's a palindrome. It's like a Spinal Tap thing. It's like, how much more black could it be? Thank you for it. I didn't mean homophone. I meant palindrome, as in a Monty Python.
Pete says, I'm watching the live stream, and if Mark waves his hands around much more, that plane will never land. Graham, I don't think Mark is right about fanboys, because you define fanboy. Fanboys are people who like something to such an irrational level that they won't accept even the vaguest amount of criticism of it. Mark is an exorcist fanboy. If you take interest in something to almost irrational levels, you're a geek. Mark is also an exorcist geek.
Geek. Yes. Well, I mean...
But if you're... If you're
angel
interested
dancing
really
on the head of a pin.
In a gap between a geek and a fanboy...
Then you are definitely both a geek and a fanboy, and probably a nerd.
How about reviewing a second movie?
No, three. I just did Surveillance.
Oh, you did Surveillance.
Give me a break.
I forgot that. It kind of went in one ear and out the other. Give us a proper one with an entertaining clip. Maybe a period clip.
Young Victoria, which is bizarrely co-produced. I know I'm not the first person to point this out. Bizarrely co-produced by Sarah Ferguson and Martin Scorsese, which is the combination of names you never expected to see at the beginning of a movie. And we all know the story of Queen Victoria as the black-clad widow who wasn't amused and ended up running around the country with her Highland gilly, I think he was referred to, wasn't he? Her Majesty, Mr. Brown. Mrs. Brown. Do you remember that?
I don't think the voiceover went quite
No,
well.
No, it did. Because in England, that film was called Mrs. Brown.
Yes.
And in America, they were convinced if you called it Mrs. Brown, they'd think it was like Mrs. Mop and they wouldn't get that it was about... So in America, they called it Her Majesty, Mrs. Brown. And there is a Miramax trailer for that film which has exactly that voice. It goes... in a world of queens, she was Her Majesty. It's really awful. It's a really awful American trailer. Anyway.
What are the first words that you see at the start of that film?
Have you seen it?
Yeah.
Well, isn't it produced by Sarah Ferguson?
No, not Young Victoria, about Mrs. Brown.
Oh.
When you get to Mrs. Brown, the first words you see are BBC Scotland.
Oh, really? Okay.
Because yeah, they put the money up. Just
they like did, because it was meant to be a TV film, and then it turned into a great big theatrical hit. Well done for pointing that out. This, however, is the story from the other end of her life, when, apparently, she was unbelievably hot and feisty. And so we meet the young Victoria when she is not yet of age, but is being looked after by her fearsome mum, played by the magnificent Miranda Richardson. I have to say that I'll see anything with Miranda Richardson in it. And incidentally, if you haven't seen Miranda Richardson in The Mad Monkey, which I was talking about the other week, go about you know, voiceovers and narration, go and see The Mad Monkey. You'll get it out on DVD. It's called Twisted Obsession in America. It's one of her greatest performances. Love Miranda Richardson. She's fabulous. So she plays a mum. And then Sir John Conroy, who is played by Mark Strong, who is also terrific. Didn't Mark Strong come on the programme?
Yes.
He's great.
Yeah.
If you want a threatening...
He's also the voiceover artist for Who Do You Think You Are? He always does all those, all the kind of explanation of the family tree.
Oh, okay.
And then Mark decided to pursue that interesting angle further.
That's Mark's interesting. Not. Okay, well, I imagine he's less threatening in that, but the whole thing, he has a great brooding screen presence. So at the beginning, so she's being sort of looked after and oppressed by this very, very sort of fearsome guy who effectively wants to be the regent, and her mum, who's played by Miranda Richardson. Then the king, who's played by Jim Broadbent, wearing this fantastically sticky-up wig and shouting and yelling a lot, the real kind of scenery chewing performance, terrific. King pegs out, at which point she is able to take over the throne and immediately puts her mum and Sir John in his place and immediately settles down to the business of taking control of the reins of power and dealing with which suitor she is going to go for. She has two leading suitors to choose from. One of them is played by Paul Bettany.
He's as gorgeous as nuts, isn't
he's
he?
As gorgeous as nuts.
Yes.
And the other one isn't. Here's a conversation with her and the one who isn't, played by Paul Bettany.
Do you ever feel like a chess piece yourself? In a game being played against your will?
Do you?
Constantly. I see them leaning in and moving me around the board.
The Duchess and Sir John?
Not just them. Uncle Leopold. The King. Sure half the politicians are ready to seize hold of my skirts and drag me from square to square.
Then you had better master the rules of the game until you play it better than they can.
You don't recommend I find a husband to play it for me?
I should find one to play it with you, not for you.
That, of course, turns out to be Albert. He of
no.
legendary adornment.
Prince Albert.
Yeah.
Him of the hall.
Him of the yes, and but which I have to say, it is frankly an you know, a sort of Orlando Bland role. Now, my problem is, if I was in her position, on the one hand, you have Paul Bettany, who's meant to be slightly devious and slightly kind of, you know, and you don't trust him.
Is he Lord Melbourne?
Yeah, he is. Yeah,
the Prime Minister.
Yeah,
yeah.
You know, but he's Paul Bettany.
He's not playing Paul Bettany, though, is he?
No, he's playing Lord Melbourne, but he's doing it in that Paul Bettany way, which is great because he's rascally and he's, you know, and he's sly and he's kind of, you know, and he's fantastic. On the other hand, you have the person that you know she's going to end up marrying, Albert, who she writes letters to.
You have just given that away. There are some people
who
don't
didn't
know.
Know. Okay,
didn't
you know,
know
Paula XIII. Paula XIII comes back down to earth. Citizen Kane, it's a sledge. All that was Sixth Sense. It's a ghost. So there is an imbalance for me anyway, which is that every minute that Paul Bettany's there, I'm going, run off with Paul Bettany, run off with Paul Bettany, run off with Paul Bettany. Oh, you're going for Albert.
The Queen,
you know,
can't
what?
Run off with the Prime Minister.
No, but it's a shame.
That would be a scandal.
Yes, it would. But
do you think that's ever happened?
If the Prime Minister was Paul Bettany...
Has the Queen ever run off, or the King?
I can't, you know, unfortunately, Lord Melvin isn't here anymore because he would have been able to answer that and probably tell us that he did a programme on it. But I can't tell you. I think it's probably unlikely. The screenplay is by Julian Fellowes, who famously did Gosford Park. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in order to make the Albert role more exciting, actually ends up inventing a fairly, I'm not going to give it away, but there is a fairly dramatic moment in which he kind of makes up.
Does it involve underwater drilling?
It involves underwater drilling and a quick trip to the moon. No, he wants to make him more heroic and more dashing than he is, because I think probably the way the story is going is he's a bit boring, but, you know, hey, they're really in love. But so they do this kind of dramatic action set piece, which didn't really happen like that. And he's been on a couple of programs talking about how it's not true, but the spirit of it's true. I love the way people do that. It's based on a true story. The thing I'm saying isn't true, but the spirit of the way I'm saying it is true. And a lot of people have been quite sniffy and said, well, you know, there's not much story going on. You know what's going to happen. She's going to marry Albert and blah, 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 blah. Here's the problem. Actually, all those people are being sniffy about this film are misjudging who it's aimed at. I go on and on and on about the fact that there are very, very few films made for young girls that are, you know, that are good movies, that are good movies that they can go into. I mean, that's some Trinian's movie, which is absolutely garbage.
High School Musical 4 on the way.
Yeah, I know. I'm a bit absolutely worried about that. No. But is Ashley going to be in it?
Yeah, I think so.
Is she? Well, because she's at the end of three, she stays at the school because everyone else is gone. Zach and, you know, what's her name, Hugness, have all gone. But she gets to stay. I think Ashley Tisdale gets to stay, but I'm not sure whether she's going to be in the fourth one. I wouldn't be the same without her.
I think we're distracted.
No, but, OK, yes. If you were... It's a PG certificate film, and here's the lovely thing that it says in the extended classification. It is PG because it contains one scene of mild injury. At one point... Oh, no, actually, I can't read that out because it gives away the bit that I was... The one scene of mild injury, which is the great invention of Julian Fellowes' screenplay, incidentally. But... If you were trying to find...
Who does it happen to?
I can't tell you because it would give it away if I told you who was mildly injured and he made it up, OK? If you're looking for a film to take a young girl to, you know, that's like... I have a daughter... No, Simon. I mean, I have a daughter, right? And okay. I want something other than that rubbishy St. Trinian's film. Here is a film in which you have a strong female lead. The plot is about her finding her own way in politics, about her demanding equality in her relationship. It is nice to look at. It has, a very sort of well-designed period costume feel to it. It has a couple of terrific performances. I mentioned Mark Strong and Paul Bettany, Miranda Richardson, and Emily Blunt is very, very fine in the lead role. It's not fantastically historically accurate, apparently, but I don't care because it's broadly in the right ballpark. And it is not a film in which the lead is meant, despite my facetious comment at the beginning about it being about the point in which Queen Victoria was hot, it is not a film in which the young heroine is asked to be fabulous by being hot. It is actually a film in which the young heroine finds her way by being solid and by being intelligent and by being smarter than those people around her. And it is a film in which has a central female character that the young female audience could look at and not feel stupidly compromised by the way in which modern cinema thinks that everybody watching those movies has to be some kind of incredibly dozy, sub-Beverly Hills floozy role in order to engage the audience. I really thought if you've got young, you know, if you've got, and I'm going to say young kids, I mean, you know, 10-year-old, 12-year-old, that kind of, take them to see Young Victoria, because I enjoyed it, even with a little bit of invention, and there are some fine things in it, and I think an awful lot of people who've been sniffy about it in the reviews are sniffy old men. Yes. And if you have a young daughter of the age, go and take it to see it, because I thought it was, you know, it's a film about a woman finding her way in politics and putting her own stamp. Heaven knows there are few enough of those around, and I think Emily Blunt's very good.
Fine as nuts.
Fine as nuts.
It's official. So
the frocks are great as well. And the wigs, particularly Jim Broadbent's wig, which is absolutely... Yeah.
I've just seen him in the trailer. But you can tell instantly that Jim Broadbent has had the time of his life.
He has. It looks like he's walking into a wind that has lifted the top of his sort of scalp up like that. And it's got a kind of ski slope tinting effect. And he's really enjoying it.
On the subject of movie backflips, which we were doing 140 characters, movie in reverse, this from Steve... for the Sound of Music, family crosses a mountain range to join the Nazis before forgetting how to sing and banishing their governess to a nunnery, which I quite like. Alien.
Oh, good.
This is Paul in London. Tasty female astronaut changes out of spacesuit in cupboard. Large, scary lizard man shrinks to the size of snail and burrows into John Hurt's stomach, and everyone goes for a long sleep. Dear Harvey and Bob, this is...
Did you get that?
What?
Harvey and Bob?
Weinstein.
Well done, Steen.
After Steen, is it?
Let's call the whole thing off.
OK. After a bus is formed out of an explosion, Sandra and Keanu have to drive backwards for 50 miles an hour whilst people risk their lives jumping onto the bus. Eventually, it stops and everyone reaches their destination perfectly content and ready to get on with the rest of the day. We'll leave it on this. Ian from Ireland, he says, this is The Graduate. Unemployed guy drops his girlfriend off at a church so she can marry another man, then sleeps with ex-girlfriend's mother and goes to college.
That'll do, won't it? Oh, no, hang on, I'll quite late. Sorry, this is Mac Millings. Dear Eminem, on There Will Be Blood.
Yeah.
Daniel Day-Lewis saves a priest's life and is inspired to save the environment by putting all the world's oil back into the ground. What else is new,
That's
Doctor?
Very good. Let's very quickly do American Teen, which is described by its director, Nanette Bernstein, as a documentary offering a cross-section of Yank high school life. The poster's got a bunch of kids on it, and it says, which one were you? You know, the nerd, the jock, the heartbreaker. Here's a scene in which the geek tries to date.
I have a new crush. Her name's Lauren. She's a freshman in band. She just moved here, so she hardly knows anyone at all. So I actually might have a chance with her. Hey, is Lauren here?
Yeah. Lauren? Hey.
Hello.
How are you?
Pretty good. How are you?
Wow, thank you. What are these for?
Just because.
Oh, thank you. These are awesome.
I took a shower today and then did almost nothing. So I'm kind of just the opposite.
Oh.
I got my oil changed. That was exciting. So do you want to go see a movie Sunday?
Yeah.
Now, I hope that you can tell from that this is it's meant to be completely verite, right? It's people just captured talking the way people actually, you know. Here's the problem with the film. I mean, essentially what you get is a bunch of sort of reaffirming cameos, you know, the jock, the nerd, the thing, the that, the ding, the bitch, the whatever. But the problem with it is that I spent the whole film thinking, actually, you're acting. You're not really these people. You're doing a kind of Mike Lee verite acting job. And I became so convinced that this was the case that I actually started thinking that it was a drama and was then kind of surprised at the end to find out that it was absolutely meant to be a documentary. If it is a completely, absolutely as things happen documentary, how come the camera is there at the moment that somebody gets dumped by mobile phone? How come the camera is there when somebody commits an act of vandalism? Which, if they're actually committing an act of vandalism and the cameras are there, then why? That's not quite right. How come people are having conversations that look like they've been workshopped and scripted? How come all these things are... And this is an essential problem. Now, the director insists that it's all completely uninterfered with documentary. I don't know what the truth or otherwise of that is. But what I know is that watching it feels like watching a mockumentary that is staged. And the essential problem with that is, consequently, I don't believe it. And if I don't believe it and I start watching it as a drama, I want it to be more interesting and inventive than simply reaffirming the stereotypes that I had when I went into it. It's kind of hoist by its own petard. I mean, I know what my suspicions are.
What are they?
Well, my suspicions are that things are not exactly as they seem, that it's not just a matter of people just doing what they're doing, that there is an element of staging involved. But I have nothing to go on other than my gut reaction watching this. And if that's not true, then the way in which people are behaving completely naturally looks so much like they're acting that it's almost not worth filming them. It's not without interest. I mean, there is quite interesting, but I end up knowing what I knew before, that high school in America breaks down into the jocks, the geeks, the nerds, all that stuff.
Ladyboys. No, not ladyboys.
Simon.
Film boys.
Fanboys.
Fanboys, that's what it was. Where did that come
from? Yes, I think you've suddenly opened a door that perhaps you should remain firmly closed. And so, Doc Schmock.
Dear Dastardly and Muttley, apparently High School Musical 4 will have a brand new cast. No Ashley.
No, I know. Although it's just because at the end of 3, she's the one who gets allowed to stay behind. But I know apparently she's not in there.
Dear Statler and Waldorf, this is George.
She's got a statue of me by the side of her bed now.
Has she?
Yeah, she got a Kermode Award.
I'm sure it's a major thrill for her. How do you know she's got it by her bedside?
That's what she said. She's going to say, I'm going to put it on the bedside. In her
George at UEA. Dear Statler and Waldorf, as it happens, I'm being dragged to see High School Musical 3 at our student union tonight. And now that you've mentioned what happens to What's-Her-Face at the end, I might have an excuse to weasel out of it from the bottom of my heart. Thank you. Mac has got another backflip. His, like this, dear, he's a ghost, she's a bloke. This is 7 as a backflip.
Yeah.
Serial killer reattaches Gwyneth's head. Then he goes on to save 6 other people. That he goes on to save 6 other people does not outweigh the fact that we now have to listen to Gwynny all the time.
Very good.
Now, again, animals up and down the country have attacked laptops.
It's tea
and
time.
People have been hit by games consoles.
Yes. I'll do a very quick review of Wendy and Lucy. Independent movie. Woman and dog arrive in small town. Car breaks down. Dog gets lost. Woman wanders around. End of film. That's American independent cinema.
Movie of the week.
Young Victoria.
Not Watchmen. Many people very upset.
No, I'm sorry.
Thanks for downloading this BBC Radio 5 Live podcast. And if you like this, you might also like this.
Fighting Talk.
Big Phil's a goner after just half a season at Chelsea. But if he wanted to share the blame for a sacking, where should he point the finger? So you are now the finger of Scolari. Gary, where's it pointing?
OK, the digit of doom, the finger of fear, call it what you like.
Very good. I don't know
that Scolari would blame anybody. He's that sort of fella that would accept £7 million and go on his way quietly.
For details of other 5 Live podcasts, go to the website bbc.co.uk/5live or go to the podcast directory in iTunes and search for 5 Live.
If you enjoyed that, why not visit the Kermode Uncut website at bbc.co.uk/Mark Kermode, where you can find out more about what I think about movies and watch a vodcast of the Mayo Kermode Film of the Week.